From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in East Oakland.
I live in Richmond.
Lake Merritt.
I live in North Oakland.
Berkeley, California.
I live in the Golden Gate neighborhood.
Coming up, we meet a man whose job is to get beaten up.
What I really remember well is my first day of instructor training. I remember going to Trader Joe's afterwards and not wanting to get within 30 feet of any woman who was shopping because I was used to watching them and, like, you know, coiling myself for a strike.
And we'll hear from the nation's eldest national park ranger about racism in a time of women empowerment.
The unions were not yet racially integrated. So all of the black workers were funneled into this temporary union.
Women attacking the status quo, today on Cross Currents. I don't know if you've ever been to a women's self-defense class, but there's often a guy in a big, bulky suit whose job is to just stand there and get hit. Well, there's one class in the Bay Area where he does a whole lot more than that, and where that need for self-defense can feel a lot more real. KLW's Casey Miner takes us there in this episode of her podcast, The Specialist. And a special warning, this piece deals with violence and sexual assault, and it does have some strong language.
Hey, just hold up for just a second. I'm not gonna lie, I just need like $5.
I don't have any money, I'm sorry.
Nice. You got money.
If someone is telling me, oh, back away, I'll be, yeah, no problem, I'm backing away. But I'm taking steps towards them.
You need to back off.
I'm asking you nicely.
You need to leave me alone. I cannot help you.
I want there to be a clear point where it turns from where you're just talking to someone to where someone's an actual threat.
Listen, bitch, I'm going to take it out of you, or you're going to give it to me.
You need to leave me alone.
Then he gets an elbow to the face.
Drop! Knife! No! Knife! No! Right! No! Axe! No! No!
When I see the suit, I don't see Tim. Like, I see some crazy, mean guy.
Tim Kinney and the suit, they may as well be two different people. So just keep that in your mind starting now. Tim's a tall, blonde, kind of goofy guy in his 40s who does a lot of martial arts and lives in San Francisco with his wife and two dogs.
We had three. In June, we lost our oldest dog, Logan, and it was so sad.
I'm sorry.
Okay, so that's Tim the guy. Then there's Tim the suit.
How old are you? Well, like 16,
just walk away.
Huh?
It doesn't matter how old I am.
Nice. It doesn't matter how old you are. I mean,
leave me alone. Just walk away.
I think about
Big no!
No!
Good!
The suit is his work outfit, a modified, super padded football uniform and a giant foam head covered with duct tape that makes him look like a creepy cartoon alien. This is the disguise he uses to become a kind of guy you don't want to run into.
The short version of the job is I'm a walking, trash-talking heavy bag.
Well, you and Moloch of June Quinn.
I don't feel like talking to you.
Tim's one of a few mock attackers who work for Impact Bay Area. It's a chapter of a national organization that runs intensive self-defense classes, primarily for women. By intensive, I mean 8 hours a day for 3 straight days. I mean that Tim and the other mock attackers will come after you repeatedly until you develop the reflexes and skills to fight back. I mean that they will say awful, vile things while they do this.
I bet you'd like some of that, wouldn't you?
I need to get going. I need to keep walking.
Typically in our classes, we have people who've survived simple assault, sexual assault, incest, you know, like just the whole range of bad things that can happen to people, that can happen to anyone, but that do happen to women specifically.
You have to be ready for anything. So Tim has a lot of different characters on hand, like this guy, played by Tim in the suit, who looks at an older woman in the class and says, creepily, "You remind me of my mother."
Leave me alone! Back off!
That's just one of the characters. There are more.
I have someone who is just a drunk who's clueless. I have a drunk who is aggressive, who's always wanted to do bad things to people, and now is going to. I have someone who's, I guess, like a really high-functioning sociopath who's untriggerable and planned and has an extremely high pain threshold and will really not be stopped until he's taken apart.
Would you mind showing me kind of what, if you were being a drunk person or something, like what you would do?
Yeah, you walk like a drunk person. You stumble and you just kind of walk around. If I'm talking, I'll slur my voice. What are your headphones for? Hey, I'm Larry. How's it going?
Almost instantly, I see him become that other person. After 20 minutes of a casual conversation, I'm suddenly just a little bit nervous. His shoulders slump, his eyes get small and mean. And even though the words he's saying aren't threatening, there's just this menace. And this is his job.
Hey, stay over there. You're making
me uncomfortable. Oh, hey, Amber, come right there.
Stay over there.
Hey, it's funny. I'm from Citroen. Where are you from?
You know what? I don't
want to
talk right now.
Yeah,
leave me alone.
I just sort of will try and like channel sort of like the various archetypes of toxic masculinity.
It's very nicely phrased.
Thanks. I worked hard on it just now.
Yeah. So as you might imagine, chances are a guy who says things like various archetypes of toxic masculinity is not in real life one of those archetypes. He found out about Impact through a friend who had taken the class. He watched her fight another mock attacker.
And it touched part of me because, like, people who are close to me, those things have happened too. And it was difficult to sit through. It was just hard.
He wanted to help. He was accomplished in martial arts, and he hated his other job at the time. He was serving eviction notices, among other things. He says he wanted to do something good for the world, and this is what he picked.
So wait to get in position, and I'll say a word that begins and ends with a letter K, and it has an I and a C in the middle. And that's when you'll know what to do, all right? So spit. And switch. Switch your leg down.
No.
And kick. And switch.
Now, a lot of his job is working with rooms full of women to perfect their kicks and rolls. He helps them yell no a little bit louder. He works with other mock attackers and with female instructors called whistles to drill lots of different kinds of fights. He says he feels like he makes a difference for the women in the class, and the class has made a difference for him.
My wife was actually really skeptical of me starting this work for a couple different reasons. And I've found and she's found that I've become just much more emotionally open and available and more articulate about my feelings before. Before that, I was like a typical Irish-American New Englander, like very, 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 very limited emotional range and really, really limited ability to articulate my feelings for a person who's generally pretty articulate. But that's changed. That's opened up.
A big thing about the classes is that they're really, really supportive. Every time a woman fights Tim or another mock attacker, the rest of the class whoops and cheers her on. Part of the reason is it's just so intense without that. The adrenaline, the feelings of threat and fright, they're real, even if they're happening in a safe place.
What I really remember well is my first day of instructor training. I remember going to Trader Joe's afterwards and not wanting to get within 30 feet of any woman who was shopping because I was used to watching them and, like, you know, coiling myself for a strike.
That lasted for a while. He says he'd feel like women around him could tell what he'd just been doing. He knew he was doing the bad things for the right reasons, but the stakes created some bizarre inner dialogue.
I felt like I was just like the Michelin tire man, like walking through a China shop of someone's life. Like, you know, you're in this bulky armor and you're backing up a woman and you're calling her a bitch. And at the same time, you're thinking like, am I presenting a good target? Am I close enough to refer her to hit? And, oh, what am I f***ing up? Am I doing permanent and lasting damage to someone? Am I re-traumatizing people? I don't want to re-traumatize people. I really want to help them work through trauma. Does this even work?
Do you think they're afraid of you?
Yeah.
I'm Mariko Sturgis. I'm 21 and I go to college. I guess I present more butch lesbian, which I have heard I threaten masculinity. So that's the problem, I guess.
Mariko's the woman you heard fighting with Tim at the beginning of this story. She's fought him a lot, actually. She's taken almost every class Impact offers. She started taking the classes after an incident at her college a few years ago. A group of guys she didn't know blocked her way in an empty parking lot.
Something about they get more p- than I do, and I steal all the bitches, and then, yeah, I can't really remember. I kind of blocked it out again, but those are the two things that I've remembered ever since.
Eventually, the guys let her go. Mariko says this kind of thing has happened to her a lot, but this incident was the scariest. It's the one that sent her to the class.
Can you just like describe your first day for
me? Oh God, I thought I was gonna puke. I was so scared.
And part of that fear was Tim.
I hated Tim. I couldn't stand him. I probably called him every name under the sun, to be honest with you. I mean, I may have called him a douchebag, and I may have called him a dick. I wanted to do fights with him so I could beat the crap out of him.
There's one fight in particular she remembers.
Yeah, it was with Tim.
One thing you should know here, religion's really important to Mariko. She's a youth leader in her church, but it's also something people use against her because she's gay. So she asked Tim to make this fight personal, and he did.
He did a lot of religious-based crap and said a lot of stuff to me during a ground assault. So I was on the ground and he was holding me down on top of me.
What did he say?
If I could remember. It was just a bunch. I kind of blocked it out. It was a lot of like, you're going to hell. You need to come to the light. And then at the very end, he said something like, I'm going to kill you because no one wants you around anyway. And that's when he went in for the choke. And I fought back. Yeah.
This fight was a big turning point for Mariko. She says she was crying, but she fought anyway. And she gained confidence. She got what she came there for. But it didn't make her like Tim any better. Even much later, she says her body would still shake when she saw him.
Does he know this stuff?
No. I've never told him any of this. So.
How do you feel about him hearing this?
I hope he still likes me after. I think he will, but yeah, I mean, if he hears it, he hears it. I'm being honest about it, so. But I just hope he still likes me.
The reason Mariko's so worried about Tim hearing this, it's not because she's still scared of him. She's not. It's because they're colleagues now. After taking multiple impact classes, Mariko's training to be a mock attacker, too. She'll be one of the only women who does the job.
Hey, Casey, this is Tim.
Hey, Tim, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I asked Mariko if I could play some of our interview for Tim to see how he did take it. And she said, okay.
Okay, so let me play you this last little chunk.
I mean, I may have called him a douchebag, and I may have called him a dick. I wanted to do fights with him so I could beat the crap out of him.
You're laughing.
That's really funny. Douchebag and dick are like two of the main kind of like characters that I try and act like. I don't know. Those are the words that I, when I get in the character that I describe to myself, like I'll put on the helmet, I'll be like, all right, be a douchebag, or all right, be a dick. So it's funny that she used those two words.
So you're hearing that and you're like, all right, I did it.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I'm like, all right, that was a good job. That was, you know, tradecraft right there. I was an effective douchebag and I was an effective dick.
Can I help you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, geez. Oh, leg. I
can't help you, but you can go call an officer. I'm sure I'll help you. There's someone over there that can help me over there.
When Mariko and Tim fight now, she's watching him in a different way. She's learning how to be an effective douchebag herself. But during these practice fights, the adrenaline is still very real.
Sometimes it does baffle me if, like, a student has a good thing to say about the student instructor, because there's that thing where, like, most of what you've seen of me has been me yelling at you and terrorizing you and just being a dick, you know? So sometimes I'm baffled. People are like, oh, thank you, or they want to give high fives or stuff like that. Like, if I was me, I would just want to leave the room for the most part.
Yeah, no, there were no high fives wanting to be given to you. There was a lot of bad words instead. Looking back, I'm like, wow, I really judged someone. But, you know, when you have that experience of being harassed and being hurt, and then this man comes in that reminds you so much of somebody that's done that, it's really hard not to.
Go
that way.
I'll go this way. All right, ready?
Yep.
All right, ready stance. One leg forward, one leg back.
That piece was mixed by Seth Samuel, who also wrote all the music you heard. Hear more episodes of the podcast The Specialist by subscribing on iTunes or go to kalw.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. And now it's time for your stories. This is San Francisco StoryCorps. Decades before local women were trying to break Tim Kinney's bones, they were breaking gender barriers in Richmond, helping the war effort.
She's making history, working for victory, Rosie the Riveter.
And if you've ever visited the Rosie the Riveter World War II Homefront National Historic Park on the Richmond waterfront, chances are you've heard of its most celebrated ranger. At age 94, Betty Reed Soskin is the country's oldest park ranger. The talks she gives several times a week pack the house, and she helped to shape the scope of the museum through her own personal recollections. During the war, Soskin was a clerk in a Jim Crow union near the Richmond shipyards. It was a time of segregation, a time when not all women could become Rosies.
Rosie the Riveter as a concept leaves out an awful lot of history. As a woman of color, during that period, I never did see a ship under construction. I came in to work every day in a carpool, working in the center of Richmond in a temporary building that was the segregated union hall, because the unions were not yet racially integrated. So all of the black workers were funneled into this temporary union where we had no power, no vote, paid union dues, but were segregated. But you have to go back 3 years before then. I would have been Betty Charbonnet graduating from high school in Oakland. I would have been the child of a service workers generation. Our fathers and our uncles were the Pullman porters and the waiters and the red caps, the bellhops, the janitors. Our mothers were 50 cents an hour domestic servants who took care of white people's homes and white people's children. And when I graduated from high school, my full expectation was to take my place in that world. And if you now scroll ahead to 13 years ago, and I'm back in Richmond, as an equal participant in the planning of a park, I was the only one in the room who could look at the scattered sites and see them all as sites of segregation, because I'm the only person of color in the room. I became of value as a primary source. And I'm doing that, not having become a genius between the time I was 20 and 13 years ago, but as a result of how much social change had occurred in this nation over those intervening years. And much of that acceleration came about because of what happened here in Richmond. Henry Kaiser, who believed that he could revolutionize shipbuilding, that all he had to do was to de-skill labor and break it into bite-sized pieces that even women could do, or even black people could do. And he brought into a city of 23,000, a workforce of 98,000 black and white Southerners, into Richmond to build his ships without the benefit of focus groups and diversity training, and that they had to negotiate every day to get through it, and that negotiation could happen, accelerated the rate of change that sowed the seeds of the Civil Rights Revolution in the 60s. What I haven't said is that my great-grandmother was born into slavery in 1846, that she was enslaved until she was 19. She was freed with the Emancipation Proclamation, but my great-grandmother lived to be 102. My mother, who was born in 1894, lived to be 101, but the three of us were all adult women together. And that all of that American history, slavery through Reconstruction and Plessy v. Ferguson and the First World War and Lindbergh's flight.
Lindbergh is coming down as a gang fence.
Amelia Earhart.
Then to a waiting world came news of disaster.
And Martin Luther King and Malcolm X.
That one day on the red hills of Georgia.
Selma and Birmingham.
We are going to walk nonviolently and peacefully.
And the moon landing and the Mars probe.
Okay, all flight controllers, go, no go for landing. Retro.
Go.
Fido.
Go.
Guidance.
Go.
Control.
Go.
Telcom.
Go.
GNC.
Go.
Ecom.
Go.
Surgeon.
Go.
Capcom, we're go for landing.
The assassination of the Kennedys.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
All of that happened within the lifetime of three American women of color. That's not Black history. That is what we've all done.
That piece was produced by KLW's Lizak Shalit and engineered by Colin Peden. If you want to see Betty Reed Soskin in person, she'll be the keynote speaker at an upcoming benefit dinner for the Rosie the Riveter Trust this Saturday night in Richmond. And if you have a story you'd like to share, you can visit the StoryCorps booth at the San Francisco Public Library. We'll show you how at KALW.org. And while you're online, why not sign up for our podcast? You'll be able to listen to Cross Currents as you meander all over the Bay Area. Because of you, we can proudly say we're listener-supported public radio. Our team includes Lisa Bartfy, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Angela Johnston, Truk Nguyen, James Rollins, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. The line producer was Jeremy Dalmas. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music is by Therese Taylor of San Francisco. The New York Times describes her sound as, quote, delicious, miserable music. She'll play the Hotel Utah in San Francisco Sunday night. Doors open at 8 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.
And your purple heart, you're too young to fight. Girls dance to you will and say it brief. Make no mistake.
Tune into KALW News, where we give context to statements like this.
Well, when I'm teaching, I tell my students that, you know, a cell phone isn't good enough to use as contraception, but I wouldn't leave it turned on in my pocket.
And sounds like this. Aren't things better in context?
I have ways I can pacify snakes.
Well, that's awesome. But you should still join us for Cross Currents Monday through Thursdays at 5. Bringing context to news in the Bay Area.